We are now on to page 39. Still Kudrus HaChesed, so we're discussing the central mitzvah of Chesed, how we're all either takers or givers, and how being a giver is the foundation of everything. So Perek Zayin, he's going to speak about the idea of, he calls she'ifa, I think the best translation is ambition, but ambition in the negative sense, meaning one can take everything for yourself. I want to have the most. I want the most money. I want the most power. I want the best business. I want that type of ambition. So ambition, in a certain sense, I'll talk about later on, is a positive thing. You want to be able to build, to grow, to do. But ambition to take in everything for yourself, that's coming from the midah of taking, not giving. So he says, "Bnei Adam maritzim es Adam ha'shoif." So in the world, people really value, they revere an ambitious person. A go-getter. You know, you say someone's a real go-getter, you should hire him. People educate their children to be people of ambition. One of the great thinkers or philosophers said that she'ifa, ambition, that's life. That keeps you alive. Having a drive is chiyus. Is this proper? Is this correct? And according to Torah Hashkafa, is that the right outlook on this midah of being ambitious? So now he's going to sort of take this midah and show how it really comes from a source of being a taker in life. Hena she'ifa hi ra'avon. She'ifa is a ra'avon, it's hunger. It's a hunger in a person. Kasher yishaf ha'ra'ev le'achof, when a person wants to eat, who's hungry. Kacha kosher yishaf elava adam, rav lasadavar. So just like a person who's hungry needs to eat, so too somebody who has she'ifa, everything comes his way, he wants to grab it in, make it his, now take control of it. Okay, so this thinker who described that she'ifa is life, that this idea of drive or ambition, this is what life really is. We don't say hunger is life. Hunger is a tool we have within ourselves in order to eat so we don't get sick and die. Hashem gave us a gift called hunger. People who don't have an appetite, it's a dangerous situation to be in because you don't provide for your body what you need. So hunger, we don't look at as life. Hunger is just a tool to help you live. So what happens when you're hungry? So the healthy way to approach hunger is a good thing to show you that you have to eat, and then you eat until you're satisfied. And that's healthy. Hashem gave us appetite, hunger, so that we do the things needed to live. May Hashem puts into our body these urges, this feedback, so that we take care of ourselves. It's a very important thing. We have to eat. We have to know if we're very cold, our body tells us very hot, because those are dangerous situations to be in. When you're comfortable, that means that everything around you, Baruch Hashem, you're healthy. You're not hungry, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, you're not sick. Being comfortable is the sign that we're in a good shape typically, and we feel these needs, that's a sign to go and do something to keep ourselves healthy. So that's a valuable thing. Kacha gam shar hashifos mina ra'avon hena, shulche yitzro levavenu, imatovin l'ra. So too, a lot of these she'ifos that we have, these, again, ambitions, it's a type of hunger, but it's a hunger coming from the Yetzer. He says it could be Tov, it could be Ra, it could be good or bad, depending on how it's used, but it's a drive in a person, and it's pushing you somewhere. But we have to think about it more, meaning it's not so simple to say, okay, so drives, ambitions are good, depends how they're applied. So he brings the following example. Nisbon and Balechem, let's think about animals for a second. V'nemza ki ko ha-re'evim yochlu v'yesbu. So animals, when they're hungry, they eat and they're satisfied. We have sifu lochol ade yiravu od, and animals won't eat until they're hungry again. Meaning, the one difference between people and animals we'll see is that people overeat. People do things that are unhealthy, that go beyond their appetite. We don't find, I guess scientifically, they don't find animals overeating. Animals eat what they need, and they move on. It's a known thing, I believe, that lions, as vicious as they are, when they're satisfied, don't attack, because they only attack when they need food. They don't say, oh, that looks like a tasty meal, even though I'm hungry, I'm going to eat it. Only human beings do that. Now, we know it's unhealthy. I'm already full. I already finished my meal, but that cake looks so good, so I eat it. We do that. So that's not a healthy appetite. That's unhealthy. Animals don't do that. Animals, they draw the line. Okay, when I'm satiated, then I'm good. We can say that with ourselves. We experience this with drinking water. you don't drink water past, you know, what satiates you. No one overdrinks water, technically, you know. But foods that have a flavor that tastes good to us, we will overeat. We'll overdrink them because if there's something happening beyond appetite. He says, well, it's a chazer, except for a chazer, a pig. Yochol mibli herif. A pig will keep on eating. A pig never gets satisfied. Kacha gam adam. So by human beings, we find like a pig. Oh, if kesvis lo yispa. Those who love money are never satisfied with money. Famous pasuk, chazal speak about, if you're a money-loving person, no money will satiate you. You're constantly hungry. And being constantly hungry is a terrible feeling to have because you're never satisfied. This is a terrible sickness. The hunger for money itself is not what's going to always rule over you. That's one thing. Any drive towards the physical, kamohu, is just like money. You'll never be satisfied. If your drives and your ambitions are for the physical, for the material, you'll never be satisfied with it. Because the more you satisfy yourself, the hungrier you get. I mean, you find that person who says, I have enough money now. Now I can stop making money. People who are extremely wealthy are constantly working even harder. They have all the money they ever need to spend their whole lifetime. But they want more and more because for them it's power, it's life. It's the blood, it's what pumps through them. So they get more and more hungry despite the fact they think they're satisfying themselves. The Kacham Chazal give a mashal for this. Olechad Ratzonos Achumriyim, speaking about a certain physical drive. Masbio Raev. If you satisfy it, it gets hungrier. So Chazal this image that when it comes to ambitions or drives in the physical world, if you moderate them, then you're satisfied. If you feed them, then you get hungrier for more. So that's the difference between Adam and Behema. Behemoths, besides, he says, the pig, they do what they need to survive. They eat till they're satisfied, and that's it. Human beings will keep on pushing ourselves further and further to do things that we don't need, that aren't going to support us, that aren't going to give us life. It's just because we have this drive that pushes us further and further for nothing. V'nashav izbonin, ki chas Hashem al chazer v'yarachamehu. So let's think about something for a second. Hashem has mercy upon the chazer. Why? Because even though the chazer has this terrible appetite, it keeps on eating and eating. Hashem gives it plenty of food to eat. Because a pig will eat anything. So, being that a pig has such an appetite, Hashem provides it with unlimited amount of food because the pig is not picky about its meals, so eat whatever it's around. That which other animals and other creatures will toss, Yochal, the pig will eat. So it's an interesting thing how the pig seems to have such a broad appetite and it has such a hungry appetite. But Hashem doesn't let it starve. Hashem gives it things to eat. So as a parenthetical point, he says, well, we can see here, Niflos HaBori, Hashem's wonders. So having something around like a pig, it is able to clean up the world. All the psolus, all the waste in the world, the pig can eat up, so it doesn't clutter up the world. So Hashem made it constantly hungry. So it keeps on cleaning up the world and doesn't stop. So you can see as a chesed of Hashem, the animals such as a pig are willing to eat garbage. So the world doesn't get cluttered up by this disgusting garbage. I remember thinking once, I saw a book, it said, it was about vultures. It was called Nature's Garbage Collectors or something. I forgot the exact title. But same thing. You know, you always, imagine having all these carcasses of dead animals laying around everywhere. It'd be disgusting. But Hashem made animals that actually come in and eat the carcasses, so the world stays clean. You know, if there was dead deer and dead squirrels just lying all over the place, it would be unhealthy, it would stink, it would be dirty. But Hashem makes it that, you know, vultures are one of the main scavengers out there, but all sorts of different animals will come and eat dead carcasses, and it cleans it up, and makes the world clean. A parenthetical point, but it's nice to think about. So back to our topic. So a pig never feels hunger, never feels pain in its hunger, because the pig's able to fulfill its desires. So pig's always having a good time. So in terms of the pig, he has this insatiable appetite, but he's happy because he has plenty of food to eat. why are we talking about a pig? Because we have to contrast it to the Adam, the human being. Lo kein Adam, harayv tavas yitzro. But a human being who has such an appetite is not that way. That person is not happy. That person doesn't, it cannot fulfill his appetite. Zeser yishaf elav rachel kumi menu me'od. Because for a human being, that which we strive towards, again, if our ambitions are in the physical world, they're very distant from us. We can never achieve them. Milchama keveda. It's a very, very difficult war. I'm going to take out my safer for a second. I knew I had notes, and I was looking at this. Where are my notes? Because I was using my safer, I was using the copy. That's why. So this, so human beings, they have this insatiable hunger, but yet it's very distant from them. They can't fulfill it. So Milchama Kveda, it's a heavy, it's a difficult battle. Meretz Rav Yilachem, they have to fight. Ad Yegia Af El Chilk Mishiyathos, until they actually achieve a little bit of their ambitions. Vim Gam Shnayim Shanim Harbe Yechay, a person can live many, many years. Liyasigel Chetzio, not even attain half of their ambitions, half their desires. Kama shemar Chazal, Chazal tell us, a very famous line in the Medrash, Ein am yotzi min ha'olam, a person does not leave the world, with even half of their taiva fulfilled. Meaning human beings, if our ambitions are in the physical, we'll never even get to halfway fulfilling what we want, because you always want more and more. There's no end to it. It's a vicious cycle that as soon as you get somewhere, you want something else. One more thing, you want another thing, so you'll never get there. Even worse than this, a person isn't just hungry for what they need right now. People start worrying about the future too. They'll say, today I'm fine, I have money in the bank today. What's going to be in 5 years from now? I have to work harder and harder, get more and more money. I have to fulfill my ambitions even more. And they will then multiply their appetite. Because they're worried about all the times. No, they're not just right now, but they're worried about the future. Even people who knows I'll even be around then. You know, I'm worried about 70 years from now. Who knows I'll even be here? Then you worry about your children. So you work very, very hard to repair everything. You have all these worries, maybe it'll be stolen, or it'll be lost, it'll be destroyed. Many people, there certainly is healthy ways to take care of yourself. You know, having some savings in the bank is important, having some for your kids is important. But people have these concerns that go far beyond that which is reasonable or healthy. People forget the idea that we trust in Hashem, and there is an element of bitachon involved. Encourage buying insurance, and insurance makes sense. Life insurance makes sense. But there's a certain amount of just building up savings, working extra hard just to have a little bit more in the bank, which at a certain point you have to draw a line and say, I should live life right now. I can't just think about what's going to be in 70 years from now. I can just think about the future. And what if? You know, what if the stock market dips? What if somebody comes in and robs my house? All those what ifs, that's going beyond your hishtadlus. And the problem is, the more a person has, the Yosef Lahachin Achar Rabba, they keep on preparing even more. Kachel Maso Yirbu Daigosa, but then they worry even more. You know, Marbin Chasim Marbin Daiga, the more you have, the more you worry. The Yigdal Ravono Achiyule Naso, and then the hunger becomes even greater until you can't handle it anymore. So there's a cycle in a person. Again, there's moderation, there's a line to draw, and some of it is proper, based on Ishtadlis and Teva, is what we should do. But there is a point where a person goes beyond what's necessary, goes to an extreme, because they have this drive to build more and more, make more and more, have more and more. And where's that coming from? That's coming from the person just wanting to be able to have more for themselves. That's ultimately where it comes from. Now, Rav Dessler, in a different piece, he quotes a very interesting medrash. It was actually last week's parsha, B'Shalach. The medrash says that B'makom shatamotze roshim ragli adam. The place where you find the human's footprints, Sham nilfanecha. Hashem says, that's where you'll find me. It's a very funny phrase. Where you find the human's footprints, that's where I'll be. So what's that? That's the medrash. So what does it mean? So one way to understand that medrash is that Now, where do we do our avoda? Where do we serve Hashem? It's not in the past, it's not in the future, it's right now where our feet are right now. It's in the present. If you worry too much about the future, so that's going to disrupt you for right now. If you dwell in the past, you also can't move on. You can't move ahead in life. You can't accomplish. You have to focus on, okay, where is my avoda? What is my job in life? It's right now. Right now I have to make decisions that are correct decisions. I have to do the right. I have to be true. I have to be responsible. That's for right now. What the future brings, only Hashem knows. If I worry too much about it, it's going to hamper my progress in the moment. What happened in the past, what's done is done. I can't change that. But right now is where you are, and that's where you serve Hashem. So when it says Hashem is before you, where the footprints of man lie, that's the point. Where your feet are, that's where you find Hashem. That's where you serve Hashem. That's where you connect to Hashem. It's in the present. So the more a person is looking only towards the future, they're missing out on their job right now, which is the present. The life is about making the right choices in the moment. I mean, the truth is, it's easier to deal with situations in life if you see them in the moment. I mean, if I worry about what's going to happen in a year from now, then I start getting nervous right now about my decisions. But if I say to myself, right now, what's right? And I know what's right now. So it's hard to make the decision, but I know it's the right thing. So I decide that right now. And I'll have another decision to make in 5 minutes. Okay, I'll deal with that in 5 minutes. But as long as each decision, if you're climbing a mountain, you look up, it gets very hard to climb it. If you do one step at a time, it's much easier. So life is like that. When you're in the present, say, okay, all I have to do right now, my way to serve Hashem right now is to make the right decision right now. And what if I have to do it again later? Okay, I'll deal with that struggle later. But right now, I have to make a decision, and I'll make the right decision. It's only one decision. It makes it much easier if we look at it that way. It's in the present, and I accomplish, and that's my role. That's my job. So Rav Dessler is teaching us right now that people, when they worry too much about the future, they're putting in efforts, and they're worrying so much, all it's going to do is increase their hunger to have more and more. It's not going to make them feel satisfied. No one's ever going to feel, okay, now I have enough. Then now I feel secure. No one gets that feeling. The feeling is, okay, I need more. And you worry more, and you have more concerns. So this drive to be prepared for the future, it stands against you. So you don't even use what you have right now for your needs because you're too concerned with the future. I'm not willing to spend money right now because I need that money for the future. But life is right now. The future is in the future. You're supposed to be living right now. Even if you could satisfy your hunger right now a little bit, but these drives won't leave you alone. You'll have this terrible hunger until a person dies still hungry and worn out. Because if life is all about satisfying that hunger, and the hunger is never satisfied, so the day a person dies comes, and they still haven't satisfied their hunger, but they've been working very, very hard to do it. So they die hungry and worn out from all the work they've done. Obviously, that's the wrong approach. So he brings here a very interesting mashal, which he himself saw. It says that he was in the north. I don't know where he was. But he says, Lifnei Shanam Harbe, many years ago, in a duty derech artos atzafun, I was traveling in the north. Amrisi adas evim re'evim. He saw a pack of wolves that were hungry. Ratsim u'mechapsin mezonam. They were running and looking for food. V'yemtsu nivlas chayekna. So they found a small animal carcass, the wolves. Mushlach asal darkam. It was cast on their way. V'yekpsu kulam aleha mevuhom d'chubetz. All the wolves, they jumped onto this carcass to eat it. For nobody could actually eat the food because they were attacking each other, the wolves. I mean, they're all fighting over the animal. So each one was knocking the other one out of the way, and no one was able to actually eat. And they bit each other, and they fought each other. So all the wolves were injured and bleeding. And they all fought until most of them were just laying there on the snow, just worn out, unable to move. But just, a few individuals who were the strongest wolves, they were able to take a bite of the meat. The moment passed. So these remaining wolves also started fighting against each other. They still compete. They competed for the for to the, each one should get this animal. So they started fighting again and biting and hitting and attacking. And they kept on fighting until one of them finally overcame the rest. And it grabbed the meat and ran away. So we picture that scene. Now, this is how the animal world works. Survival of the fittest. They say it's, you know, a dog-eat-dog world. You know, everybody's fighting to get their piece of the pie, just like the animals are. And if that's your view on life, so what is this all about? It's about taking for yourself. You know, imagine the wolves all sat down together and said, everybody can share a piece of this meat. Right? And they helped each other have a bite. So, I mean, I don't know if there's enough meat for everyone to survive, but that'd be such a beautiful scene. Obviously, the animal world doesn't happen that way. Animals don't have that type of thought process. Instead of helping each other out, so they fight to the death until one of them walks away with the piece of meat. The Shlomo Volba, in his Sefer Avos Shur, he discusses this idea. He says, you know, out there in the world, they call it, you know, there's a Melchemes Achayim. You know, you're going to approach the battle of life. And like we said, survival of the fittest, the dog-eat-dog world, I mean, it sounds like the world's a competition. And animals do compete. Animals compete with each other in order to get the food, to get the mate, to get the territory. That's what animals do. But he says that for human beings, that's not what the world's all about. Hashem didn't make a world in which to compete with each other. Hashem made a world, he calls it Olam HaYedidus, a world of love. It's a world of care for one another. And that's the world is. People should care for one another. Hashem cares for us. Hashem made a beautiful world that we can partake of. If we all just got along and cared for each other, imagine what the world would be like. If we appreciated the love of other human beings, love of Hashem, it'd be such a different world to be in. The idea of survival of the fittest is not a Torah Hashkafa. I'm not talking scientifically. I'm talking about just the idea that, you know, the strongest one wins. No, we believe in care and caring for each other and love and giving. That's what we believe in. It's not whoever is most fit that gets the meat. That's not the way the human being is supposed to function. Unfortunately, the world often ends up like the animal world, and that is a survival of the fittest. And the strongest nations overcome the others, and there's wars, and there's fighting, and there's taking. People take and don't give. People don't care about each other. And that leads to unfortunate circumstances. But that's not how Hashem made the world. Rav Volba, in another sefer he wrote, he says that he once went to a... it was after the Six-Day War. He actually wrote a whole book between the Six-Day War and the Yom Kippur War. You know, in Eretz Yisrael, there was a big tshuva movement. People were so inspired by the miracles of the Six-Day War. So many of the Chiloni Israelis were exploring Torah, exploring religion. So Rav Volba went around to lots of secular kibbutzim, and he used to give shiurim there to teach them about Torah, mitzvos. So he has a sefer called Olam HaYedidus, the world of love. That's what it's called, and it's based on his first piece in the book, where he writes down his lectures he gave these kibbutzim. He says he went to a secular kibbutz and he was speaking, and he said to them, "If you could describe Torah in one phrase, how would you describe it?" You know, what's the basis of Torah? What's the basis of Yiddishkeit? So people might say, you know, Amunah. People might say, you know, laws or obedience. Rav Volba says, you know what it is? It's Olam HaYedidus. It's that we live in a world of Yedidus, of care and love for another. Hashem's Torah given to us is Hashem caring for us. The Torah's laws are all so we can care for each other and for the world. And that's what Yiddishkeit's built on. It's built on Yedidus. That's what he describes it. A very different image than wolves tearing at each other in order to grab the meat. We're trying to do for each other and do for the world and do for Hashem. So Dessler continues, "Rusbananti lamare." So I watch this pack of wolves and I watch the scene in front of me. And I saw that the victorious wolf ran very far away. But he didn't walk away unscathed. Wherever this wolf was running, it was covered in blood, meaning it was snowing out, so you could see all the red blood trailing in the snow. So, because he was bleeding also from all the wounds that were inflicted upon him by his friends. So think about it. This is the strongest, the victorious wolf. He won. He won the battle. Is he a winner? Is he really a winner? Amarti Libi, I said to myself, "Hein bedamohu, avo yisbias ravono." So he said, well, you know, he's bleeding, But at least he's going to satisfy his hunger. I mean, bottom line, he'll get to eat the meat. Olav nemar benafsho yavi lachmo. So that's what it says, that you bring your bread with your soul. So he looked at this wolf that won the battle, and he said, "This, no, it's hard to look at him as a winner per se, but at least at the end of the day, he will have the meat, and he'll satisfy his hunger." Then I looked back at all the remaining wolves, all the ones that were there in the snow, injured, dying, in pain, worn out. They had much worse wounds than the winner. They're losing their blood. And all of their strength was leaving them. So what did they gain from their fight? So they felt the shame of those who were overcome, of those who lost in the war. Asher chibram chaver hikam, their friend struck them down. And their friend's going to walk away satisfied. And what are they? What do they have? Hemasvei makos, they're filled with wounds. Gam ravonam, their hunger is not satisfied. Zer shalaman hisbiu nochamu. So they fought in order to be satisfied, but it didn't work. Odenu bechazko kivrishona. Their hunger is as it was from before, even worse right now. So the winner at least walked away with his appetite satisfied. But all these other wolves, they're worse off than before, and they're still hungry. So that's the mushel we're going to look at. Ata v'sbonon el ravon ha-shoef l'chomrius. So now let's think about somebody who really strives, who has a drive in life for the physical, for the material. Also b'zichroni ha-maisiyah hazos. So I keep thinking about this whole story. Kiti ha-mushel v'adam. This is like human beings. When it comes to humans, even the winner walks away with nothing. In the animal world, at least the winner walks away and fulfills his appetite. In the human world, if there's a competition, a person walks away wounded. Cholei walks away sick. Ayef ve'ageya, he's tired, he's worn out. And the victory he won is worthless. Because he'll never be satisfied. It'll just keep multiplying. And if this is what the victor gets, imagine the one who's defeated, what he gets. I mean, no one's going to be happy this way. Picture there's two businesses that open up, and they're in competition. And they're vicious towards one another, trying to take away customers, and undercutting the other business, and trying to slander the other business owner. So, finally, one of them, you know, wins, as it were. And that business closed down. So the guy closes down and has lost out. But the guy wins also. Is he happy now? Is he going to say, okay, now I'm fine, I have enough money now, now I have a happy life? He's not happy. Number one, he had to live the past few years with this anger and this, you know, this vendetta against his fellow business owner. And even now, he's not going to be happy with his money. He wants more money. He still has to work very hard. He hasn't gained anything from this victory. So maybe in his mind, it's easier to make more money now, but he's not going to walk away satisfied. He's not going to say, okay, great, I can close the doors now, I made enough money, I'm going to go and go home and be happy. It's not going to happen. So the victor isn't even going to feel good about his victory. And most of the world does lose in competition. So the person with this hunger, these ambitions, this person is not a powerful person. This is not the greatest person. This is somebody who's very lowly because he's going to feel he's feel lacking. You're going to ask me the following. So let's say somebody who strives towards good. So we'll get to that. So we'll talk about that. So we're talking now about someone who has drives for the physical, for the material. But so having a drive or ambition, it's not a virtue, it's not a mila when it's for the physical world, because you're not going to walk away happy. You're not going to walk away victorious. There's no victory in that, because you're never going to feel satisfied. We mentioned a few weeks ago, we said how being wealthy is not a function of your bank account, it's a function of your attitude. If you have what you need, then you're wealthy. And being poor also is not a function of your bank account. If you don't have your need, you're poor. So you could have millions of dollars in the bank, but you feel lacking, so you're poor. You could have nothing in the bank, but you feel satisfied, you're wealthy. That's the bottom line. So if you have these ambitions, that means you're not satisfied. You need more. You need to build more. You have to do more. You have to make more. So those ambitions are for the physical material. They're not going to make you happy. They're not. That's not the essence of life. That's not the drive in a person. Not what a person's looking for. And at the end of the day, what do you walk away with? Nothing, because you're still lacking at the end of the day. So he's going to show us the flip side. I mean, there is an idea of ambitions that are good. But this whole description is based on the fact that these people are just takers. They want for themselves. If their drive is for the physical material, it means I want for myself. I want money. I want pleasure. I want power. I want recognition. I want fame. I want kavod. So it's all about you taking. And that just means you're not just a taker, but you're an insatiable taker. That's what those ambitions are, which means that takers are never going to be happy because there's always more to take. So they're not going to be happy people because I always want something beyond me. And I'm always lacking because I need something else to complete me. So he has here on the bottom an addendum to this chapter. So there's an additional point made by the author. I'm not sure like when this actually got to the Sefer, but this is an additional point that is made to add into this parak. So he says, "V'chitishal lama huzeh, asher lo yispa shoef b'asher yasev v'gilav." So why is it true that somebody who has these ambitions will never be satisfied? Why does Hashem make it that way? I mean, why don't we have it that a person who wants money makes money and feels happy? Why does Hashem make it that the physical drives are never fulfilled? Why does Hashem make it that way? Yeshba says, "Davar amuk v'nifla." So there's a very deep point to be made over here. Hoshifli koach hamoshich, sheyim shochi lavas Hashem chutzelo. The idea of sheifa, the idea of ambition, it's a power in a person that draws in from the outside. I mean, what it does, it means you're taking in to yourself from what's beyond you. Klamar she'eno doma l'rav nativi. It's very different than natural hunger. We have to be able to distinguish between natural hunger and we're calling she'ifa. Natural hunger is that I have this drive to fill my stomach. It's a necessity for life. It's to keep me alive. And that's something that has a limit. Meaning there is a level of food in your body, in your system, that will satisfy you, give you nutrition, make you healthy, give you strength. And there's a way that can be quantified. We don't always know that exact quantity. Often we overeat, but we understand there's a certain amount of food that makes us feel good and healthy, and a certain amount which makes us feel like we've overeaten and unhealthy. That's clear. Let's say there's somebody though who has this drive for money. There's no quantifiable amount to say, okay, that's enough for me. It doesn't exist. There's always a new taiva that develops. It's like artificial. To just broaden yourself, broaden your holdings, to make yourself more powerful and wealthy. To take something in from the outside, because it's outside of you. I mean, I need it because it's there and I can have it. Not because it's fulfilling any particular need. There's a number to put on it. I mean, let's say someone says, okay, you know, right now I need a new roof. My roof is leaking. So I need to make sure I have $10,000 for a new roof. So that is quantifiable. It's a need. It's clear. That's not going to make you become like a money-hungry person who's unsatisfied because it's a clear need. The person says, I need more and more. I don't have enough money, I need more. Where's the more end? What's your goal? What are you striving towards? What's the money for? What are you going to do with it? What's the need? The answer is, I just need money. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the future. I need to have it stored up. I need something nicer. I need something bigger. I need this. I need that. So there's no end to that because it's not something you can quantify in any way. There's no limit to it. It's not because the actual matter itself is so important to you. It's just that because it's not yours yet, you want it. I mean, there's a concept that I need it because I don't have it. I need it because it's not mine. I need it because I need everything. That's this attitude. I can't not have something. It's something that we very much deal with constantly from the world of advertising. What's the world of advertising doing? You know, they don't really have to advertise if we didn't advertise anything, we'd still buy food and clothing that we need. Our needs would be fulfilled, advertisements are not. Advertisements are trying to show you that you need things you don't really need. That's what they're doing. They're trying to convince you that you need this. Because without the ad, you wouldn't know you needed it. It's like they're informing you, by the way, you need to have this. I never knew I needed that, but now I know. And then it becomes a need in a person. Then in your mind, in your emotions, that becomes not just like a desire. Often it can become, I need that to feel fulfilled. I need to feel complete. If there was no advertisements, we would have what we needed. No one's going to say, I'm not buying any food because I didn't see an ad for it. No, you're still going to go get food because you're hungry. No one's going to say, I'm not going to have any clothes. No, you're still going to get clothes because you need clothes to wear. No one's going to say, even cars. I'll say, I'll buy a car. But do I need that car they're advertising towards me to tell me this is the car I need to have? Because this has all the features I have to have on it. Well, I don't. I mean, I could find a different car also. But the advertisement has now convinced me this is my need. This is what I need as a car. So it's right because it's beyond me. It's not mine. It's not something that I internally feel I need. It's but this drive tells me I want to bring it in from the outside and make it mine. Mimela zelcha oski kach, and I'll show you the sign. This is true. Because when a person actually does attain these items they want to get, shuva yishvu be'enav huma, they're no longer happy with them. They become worthless to them. This biu es taivaso, and doesn't make them satisfied. When a person works so long and hard to buy a certain item that they were dreaming of, they buy it, give them a week or two, it's not so exciting anymore. They're used to it, they have it, it's done, they're on to their next thing. And when a person sees, I'm not satisfied. So they think, okay, so I will satisfy the hunger with something else. And I'll strive towards it. Because we actually see that most people who we call wealthy, they're striving for more money. And they will be moser nefesh, they'll sacrifice of themselves to make more money. More than people who are poor. People who are poor learn how to make do with what they have. You don't see them being moser nefesh for money in the same way. Like Chazal teach us, Yesh Lameya wrote to Masnav, if you have 100, you want 200. Masnav, if you have 200, wrote to Dalmeya, so you want 400. And the wording of that medrash is precise, meaning that we don't say if you have 200, you want 300. Once you have 200, you want to have even more than that. Now, the more money you have, the more money you want. So if you have 100, you'll make do with 200. Once you get 200, you don't say, okay, 300 will do it. You say, I need 400 now. And when you got 400, you'll say, I need 800 now. Because that's the attitude that we take. We always need to have more and more. Achen gam bezeh misachseves tikvosu kevrishona. So through this, our hope is still let down. The more you get, you're never happy. You still feel let down. You haven't achieved everything. Vlorach bechemdas hamamon dvarim amurim. It's not just about money. It's the same thing with other physical drives. He tells a story from the Gemara. In Amr Gemara, there was a story of somebody who was suspected of adultery. So this guy was in the house of this woman that he was being adulterous with. And the husband came home. So he was there to be with this woman, and the husband came through the door. So what's he do? So the guy goes and hides, right? This guy's stuck in the house. The husband comes home. What's he going to do with himself? He goes and hides behind the door, hides in the closet. So the husband came home, and he was about to take a bite of food that a snake had injected venom into, which would be very dangerous. So you have this adulterer hiding behind the door. He's watching the husband who just got home, about to take a bite of food that would have been dangerous for him. Poisonous food. So what does he do? So the adulterer called out, don't eat that food, and save the guy, save the husband. Vomer Sham Rava. So Rava in the Gemara says, so the question is now, at this point, is the woman allowed to return to her husband? I mean, an adulterous woman can't go back to her husband. She has to divorce her husband. But do we actually assume there's actually an act of adultery done? Or do we say that, no, this guy, he was in the house, but he's innocent? No, they avoided the act. How do you view this? So Rava says, "Ein shum chashash noaf haibemes." So Rava says, the very fact that he called out to save the husband, that's a sign for us he did not actually commit the act of adultery. Why Kim Kane Hayam Nichlamus? Because he would have let the husband die otherwise. Had he actually violated this man's wife, he would have let the man eat the poison and let the man die. The very fact he saved the man, that should serve to us as a proof that he didn't actually carry through the adulterous act. Umakshi Gemara Pshita. Gemara says, well, that should be obvious to us. What are you teaching me? Umataretzis, the Gemara answers, Shulai Haisi Omer Shib Emes Noefu. The Gemara says that maybe you could say that this guy actually was an adulterer, and he actually did the act. But this guy wanted the Baal to stay alive. He wanted the husband to live, because for him, it was much more exciting when this woman was actually a married woman, and the act of adultery was an illicit act. But the husband was dead, and the woman became mutter to him. It wouldn't have been so exciting anymore. I mean, there's this pasuk in Mishle, Mayim Gnuvim Yimtaku, stolen water is sweet. The part of the sweetness of somebody who's doing an Avera is the very fact you're doing something which is wrong. There's an enjoyment involved in being rebellious. There's an enjoyment involved in doing something which is immoral or illicit. But once it becomes okay, if this woman's husband dies and she's no longer married, so it's no longer as exciting to have her as a mistress. So the Gemara says, well, so maybe it's true. The Gemara says it's not true. The Gemara says that we assume the guy didn't do the act. But Rav Dessler says, well, but maybe it's true. I mean, maybe really we should say that he wants the woman to remain usher to him, and that makes the act more exciting. Mefarshim Sham should betosvul shenof einu yodei inyan zeh shemayim gudim yitaku, but ivreyam tzrichim iyan. So Tosfos says that the adulterer doesn't understand this. And this is building up sort of a complex idea. But we're saying that the adulterer himself, he didn't realize that he would lose the excitement of the act had the husband died. He doesn't know that. So if he saves the husband, that means he's saving the husband because he did not do the adulterous act. But he's not aware of the fact that it's much more exciting when she's actually forbidden to him than when she's permitted to him. So what does all this mean? Let's explain it the following way. So he says the following point, a very important point. When we're fulfilling a desire, we don't realize that the pleasure which comes out of fulfilling a desire is because it was a desire. Meaning that real pleasure comes from the fact that we're fulfilling a desire that we have. If you don't desire something and you get it, it's not so pleasurable, not so exciting. But when you actually want something and you get it, it's much more pleasurable. If you're very thirsty and you drink a cup of water, it feels great. If you drink because the doctor said you have to drink, 10 cups of water a day, but you're not thirsty, you drink the water, you don't get any pleasure out of the water. You're doing because you're supposed to. When the house is very comfortable, there's no special feeling in sitting in a comfortable house. When you come in from the outside and it's very hot and the AC is on, it feels great. Once you sit here for a while, it just feels normal. But there's an idea that when you're searching for something and you actually achieve that which you're looking for, that's much more pleasurable than something just being there for you. Now, the real fulfillment of pleasure isn't one actually fulfills their needs. A person feels that if only I could have that, I'll be happy. But the truth is, no. The pleasure comes from the moment where you attain what you're looking for. Once you have it, it's no longer exciting. Once you have it, you want to get yourself something very special, something new. So it's very exciting when you first buy it. Once you have it, it's nice to have, but it loses the excitement. You don't get that same thrill out of owning it because now you have it, and that's you're used to it. That's what it is. If people understood how much of this is just our own fantasies, we live very differently. Because we think, if only I had that, I'd be so happy. So when you get that, you're happy for a moment, and then you're not happy anymore. I mean, we see this all the time with kids. They want a certain toy. So you finally buy them the toy, and a few hours later, they say we're bored. Mm-hmm. Right? What happened? Well, it was very exciting in their mind. That toy was like the best thing in the world. It's going to make me busy for hours and hours. I'll never be bored again. But once you have it, you play with it, and then the excitement wears off, and you're ready for the next thing. And it's like that in life. We have our own toys also. All of us have our toys. That's what it's like. So now we understand why is it that a person never is satisfied? Because it's not, because the satisfaction is not the actual thing you get. The satisfaction came through the fact that I needed it and I got it, but the fun is through, it's fulfilling the need. It's not the item. The item is just the means to the end. But the truth, the feeling of the person is that I got what I wanted. Once they got it, they want something else. Because it's, you always have to have something you're driving towards. You have something that you're striving to get. If you don't have it, that's when you feel that you're lacking. Once you get it, for a moment, you feel good. And then again, you need something else. The tofa zos tamu chachamim. So people ask the question, lama lo yomar al minsan? So why don't we learn from experience? I mean, we all know this is true. How many times has it happened to us? That you think you're going to be happy, and you get the item you're looking for, and at the end of the day, you're not happy. People who run their entire lives after this world, when they get what they're looking for, they don't feel the pleasure, they don't feel happy. So why don't we just realize, okay, we're being silly, let's not worry about pursuing new things, and focus on where real happiness lies. Im kvar hirgish, if we recognize that our original things we attained are worthless, then why don't we recognize that for the future also? Where's our intelligence? Why are we so foolish to think, okay, that didn't make me happy, but this next thing will? But you've done that 46 times and you never got happy, so why do you think the 47 things make you happy? Why are we fooling ourselves? So this is what Shlomo Melech. Shlomo Melech says the following, Kohelis. The wisest of all men tells us, Hevel Avalim, Hevel Chachuka Lechem Dosom Hazeh. So it says, Kohelis begins, Hevel Avalim, you know, it's futile, futilities, the emptiness of emptiness. What is Hevel? Hevel is the drive for the items of this world. Gizeh Asher Hu Chutzimenu Lama Hu Lo. Hari Havalim Hema Ko Ela Shezig Mishif Oso. So we see this world is hevel. It's something which is worthless. It's something which is just air. It's an illusion. So everything is hevel. Meaning everything of this world, anything we thought was actually worthwhile, we actually discover is not worthwhile. So that's a sign to us that everything that we're trying to pursue is not something which is valuable. So we use the word kinyan for money. It's an acquisition. You own it. You can own something. That itself is a fantasy. Because owning it means it becomes part of you. Nothing outside of you could become part of you. Never becomes your actual essence. I mean, because you're going to be happy when you feel fulfilled. But no possession is ever going to fulfill you because it can't become you. And if it does, it's outside of you. It's not really you. There's a very interesting idea that the Stipler talks about. We have a word in Hebrew we call zakin. So zakin usually we translate as somebody who's older. But Chazal use zakin to mean a talmud chacham. They say zakin is actually an acronym for zeh shekana chachma. This person acquired wisdom. So it says, "V'adarta pe zaken." You should honor the zaken. That's the mitzvah of honoring a talmud chacham. So you can have a talmud chacham who's 19 years old, but being that he's a talmud chacham, he's called a zaken. You honor him. So the Stipler says the word zaken is an acronym for ze shekana, this person acquired. Well, so Chazal added in the word wisdom. This person acquired wisdom. But how do they know that? I mean, ze zaken, ze shekana. This person acquired, maybe he acquired a cow. Maybe he acquired a cucumber. Maybe he acquired a house. I mean, how do they know it means wisdom? So Stipler says, because the ultimate thing, the only thing in the world you can actually really acquire is wisdom, because it becomes part of who you are. Nothing else you acquire in life becomes you. It's something that you own, have control over, you use. It's not you. The only thing you can acquire that becomes you is wisdom. So the Torah says a zakin is zeh shekana. Zakin is somebody who acquired something. Well, what's the only true acquisition in life? It's wisdom. Because that actually becomes who you are. It seeps into you, it goes into your mind, it goes into your actions. Wisdom is you. So he says here that the idea that we can even have money and own it itself is somewhat of an illusion, because it doesn't become you. I mean, you control it, you use it, but it's not you. Bailus ownership is just that you have things you could use. No one else take them from you. No one else can have them. It's for me, not for you to use, because it's mine. But if you strive towards possessions, you're striving towards things which can't become you, and you want them to be part of you. You think this is going to make me feel fulfilled. Literally, I'm going to be complete through this, but it can't happen. It doesn't become you. It's impossible. So all you end up with is anguish. You won't be happy. So if somebody who desires to be kone acquisitions in their nefesh, that person could be happy because it actually becomes part of who they are. Wisdom, mitzvos, good midos, that's you. If you acquire a good mida, that's who you are. You actually got something because it becomes you. If you acquire a new piece of furniture, that's not you. It's something you use in life, but that's not you. That's not who you are. Nobody can steal from you a true kinyan, wisdom, midos, mitzvos. No one can take from you. A physical item can be taken from you because it's not you. But once you have something which is part of the nefesh, it's yours forever, and no one can take it. So you'll be happy, and you'll feel secure in this world and the next. So this entire, we'll call it addendum, which he adds in, he's addressing the point, that why is it that a person is never happy through acquisitions? And the true answer is because, number one, the item is not what even is driving you. There's this thrill of fulfilling a need. The item is secondary to that. And number two, the item itself doesn't become who you are. It's not you. The item is always going to be outside of you. It can't become you. So how can it make you feel fulfilled? How can it bring you perfection when it's not who you are? When you actually acquire something that becomes you, wisdom, midos, Torah, that can make you feel happy and fulfilled because that's part of yourself. And therefore, that's you. I would even suggest, we speak about marriage, children as being part of the person. You know, a husband and wife, ishto kegufo, children are part of who we are, and that brings happiness because that's actually part of ourselves. That is part of me. But any item out there, an object that I acquire, never becomes part of me, so it can't make me happy. So just to maybe sum up for a second, Rav Dess was teaching us that this whole idea of having drive and ambitions for things of this world, even though people look at it as this great virtue out there in the broader world, in terms of the idea of being a taker or a giver, it's a liability, because somebody with ambition for physical gain is a taker through and through. And it means you're competitive, it means you're putting others down, it means that you want to see others fail so you can succeed, it means you'll keep on taking, you'll never be happy, you never fulfill the ambitions, you're never going to feel satisfied, and it's not a good mida when it comes to the world of the physical. He'll talk about Mirtz Hashem in the next parak, where you find ambition in a good way. Because ambition is a good mida when used in the proper context. And we'll see about that next time, Mirtz Hashem. Thank you.